Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of the Dante's Outlook podcast. Over the next series of episodes, we'll interview experts in global markets and investing. Our goal is to help both individuals and institutions realize market opportunities and the factors that drive them. On this month's episode, we're joined by Matthew Bacciocchi, Vice President and Portfolio Manager of Gavin Hockey Wealth Specialist. We'll discuss Matt's background and investment process, including the unique approach that Gavin takes when managing the wealth of hockey players. For more than 20 years, Matt has been coordinating the financial affairs of NHL players and high net worth individuals. He co-founded Gavin in 2003 with Stuart Gavin and established the firm's investment philosophy, which we'll hear more about. Matt has a Bachelor of Commerce degree with a major in finance from Concordia University and is a holder of the Chartered Financial Analyst and Certified Financial Planner designations. Matt, welcome aboard, and how's the weather up in Canada?
It's a typical Canadian day today. It's snowy and well below zero.
Gotcha. Yeah, we got hit with a lot of snow here in New York. That's so I'd imagine it's a lot worse up north.
Yeah, we've actually had a fairly moderate winter, at least in the Toronto area. But today's a different story for sure.
Great. Yeah, I'm excited to have you on board. We haven't interviewed a wealth manager yet, so I think this is great. And you guys are very unique in that you focus on the Canadian hockey players. So just walk us through, you know, your background and what led you to co-founding Gavin.
Sure. I grew up in Montreal, kind of a typical family, very much grounded in Canadian culture and faith and sports. And you know, my brothers, and I have two brothers and two sisters, and, you know, we spent a lot of time on the driveway and on the outdoor rinks and the arenas playing hockey, but none of us had the athletic ability to go anywhere with any ability to earn income from that. So we were encouraged at a young age to get jobs and pursue our education. So after I graduated from Concordia University with a BCom in finance, I just finished playing junior hockey and moved to Toronto just a year after. And I got a job in group retirement services, kind of delivering traditional financial planning investment advice in more of a group retirement setting to participants of, you know, 401ks and group RSPs, et cetera. And it was from there that I ended up moving to a kind of a traditional financial planning firm on Bay Street. And I met my eventual business partner there. He had just finished a 14-year career in the NHL, Stu Gavin, and he was transitioning into financial services. And we got kind of partnered together and, you know, very similar core values, very similar kind of ambitions from a career perspective. And he had the life experience and a much more captivating personality than myself. And I had the academics, and I was impressed that he achieved, you know, my dream of playing professional hockey. And he was impressed that I had a bunch of designations after my name. So we ended up being a good team. And from there, we ended up starting our own firm in 2003.
That's great. And then when you started your own firm, how did you shape your investment process? And what is your investment process?
Well, we started again, Stu and I started working together in 1998 through the dot-com, you know, bust. And then early 2000s when, you know, there was a lot of scandals around Enron, WorldCom and Freddie Mac. And there seemed to be a little bit more enthusiasm for transparency and disclosure and alignment of interest between advisors and their clients. So we wanted to be kind of at the forefront of that shift. And that was really our motivation for leaving our old firm, was to improve the investment process, improve the disclosure, and just make sure that we were more aligned with our clients. So from that context, we were typically wanted to operate this multifamily office. We wanted to work with fewer clients versus more clients, really focus on service. It wasn't never had the intention of kind of being an asset gathering model. It's about having the right clients and having a high touch service and a good staff to client ratio. And we've kind of continued to do that. And we work with about 150 families, manage just about 400 million in Canada and the US. So that from that context is very much different than the typical broker dealer relationship.
Great. And then in terms of applying it to managing hockey wealth, talk us through like the importance and the culture of hockey up in Canada and why you guys find that very, why you're passionate about that.
Yeah, well, hockey is an industry in itself here, obviously. I mean, whether it's, you know, 3-on-3 rinks and summer teams and spring teams and your regular tournament teams and, you know, shooting pads and goalie training and, you know, the fitness and the mental training that the kids get through now, it's not unusual for parents to spend tens of thousands of dollars per year on that. So, but, you know, they, the statistics show that it's 1 in 1,000 chance of playing one game in the NHL. So when a player achieves that goal, they've obviously overcome a lot of challenges. They've beaten the odds. They've taken risks to achieve that. So when you take that type of attitude and try to apply it to, you know, the traditional investor psychology, investor behavior, it's much, much different because, you know, they don't have that typical loss aversion that most investors have. You know, the context of being more fearful of an equal loss versus a, you know, a similar size gain doesn't really apply to them. So we've got to be cognizant of that. So we try to translate a lot of kind of financial concepts to a hockey analogy that they'd understand. Like some of our, some of my clients tend to mock me over the years when we bring out our hockey diagram to show them, hey, where you are in the defensive zone from an investment perspective versus the offensive zone. If you're in the defensive zone, you've got these types of characteristics, maybe less earnings visibility, or you're still accumulating personal use assets. So we got to keep you in the defensive zone. And as your career progresses, you've accumulated assets, you've got some capital to invest longer term, you get into the neutral zone. And then, hey, when you've got financial independence and you're looking at intergenerational planning, or you've got that long-term contract, then you can be in the offensive zone. So they start to understand that. So we try to really relate a lot of those concepts to the players so that they can feel comfortable with it. I mean, they're not typically, they may have an interest, but they don't have the experience or the sophistication a lot of times. So we need to do a lot of hand-holding initially.
Got it. And you talk a little bit about the psychology, the sort of loss aversion in terms of hockey players or athletes in general. What do you think is behind that? Because we saw recently the Sharks forward Evander Kane, right? Racked up a lot of gambling debt. You know, you're seeing a lot of those news stories about mismanagement of money. How do you guys approach that when dealing with clients that might be, you know, exuberant or have that sort of, you know, risk aversion approach or?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't want to paint everyone with the same brush, but, you know, some of the characteristics, again, of becoming successful, you need to be coachable. And to be coachable, you need to trust your coaches and your skills instructors. And I think that, that attitude towards being very receptive and trusting is also what makes them vulnerable to predators. And if you've got some bad habits to begin with, and no one's trying to curb those behaviors because, you know, you're used to taking risks. The bad things don't happen to me because all your risks have been rewarded historically, you know, to get to where they have, to beat those odds, you had to take risks. So that's really what succumbs to that type of event. I mean, the statistics show that it's, you know, they don't really have the data to support NHL, but I think the data to support the NFL and the NBA is, you know, north of 75% of people that have financial hardship after they retire. So our goal is to get them to a point where they can retire financially independent. You know, obviously not everyone's going to do that. The average career is 5.5 years, but if they can get some breathing room between the time they retire and between the time they need to start their second career, that's really, really valuable. Because that transition's difficult.
Got it. And you've been seeing, you know, here in the US, a lot of, you know, pro athletes go the entrepreneurial route, right? They accumulate assets, they establish ownership and equity. And yes. I think that's where you've got the team aspect that kind of helps them manage that, right?
Right.
Talk to us a little bit about the current challenges facing athletes, you know, in the sort of COVID environment. You're seeing salary cap, taxes, pay disparities. What do you see there?
Well, there's a few things that are really acute in terms of refocusing players on in what we think is the most important is cash flow management. I mean, salary cap doubled from 2004 to 2020. Now we're approaching a 6-year period where it's more than likely to be flat. Obviously the pandemic has caused a lot of debt and deficits in governments, and they're going to have to increase taxes and to improve equality amongst the haves and have nots. And they're going to be targeted for that context too. So we have to anticipate tax rates are going to go up. In the NHL, there's a unique feature with escrow, which requires, you know, the balance between the revenue to be separated between the player and the owners in an equitable manner. They're going to lose 20% of their salary this year to escrow. This is coming off a 5-year period when the average escrow rate was 12.75% of lost salary. And even looking over the next 5 years, it's kind of established that it will be at least 9% on average. So their salaries are going to be eroded. And, you know, free agency this past year, 65% of players signed for under $1 million, which is, you know, a startling number given the fact that most players aspire to become a free agent. And then you look at the roster itself, the top six paid players on each team make more than the rest of the team combined. So there's a lot of disparity, and there's going to be challenges. And for us, that just reinforces the same chorus we've been chanting for 20 plus years, which is, you know, cash flow management is the cornerstone of building wealth and sustaining some financial independence.
Those are really good stats. I was not aware of that. That's very interesting. And I think, you know, when you talked about the government's entering the deficit mode and increasing taxes, I think that's sort of a headwind that you've got to manage with cash flow.
You know? Well, absolutely. I think for us, we always try to, you know, we do a lot of modeling, forecasting, and, you know, there's only a few factors that can tilt the equation one way or the other. It's either you pay less tax, you spend less, you get higher investment returns, or you earn more. Spending less is really the only lever that they can influence in a manageable way. So, and it's not for us to say, hey, this, you know, we don't want you to spend, or this is how you should spend. There's no punishment. There's just consequences. So we try to help them understand those consequences and you know, keep them on the right path and keep them on the right road and not the road that just wears down your shoes.
Got it. I like that. Spend less, less taxes, or earn more. Have you been seeing more pressure to earn more from the markets? And how do you sort of balance that objective, you know, going forward?
It's, you know, we really, our investment philosophy is really a function of the planning process we take the players through. You know, it's a lot about setting goals. What are those goals and how do you achieve those goals? And then we'll almost, you know, work backwards to say, if that's what you want to accomplish, and this is how much money you think you can make, then this is the rate of return you need to achieve, and this is how much money you need to save. And if we do some modeling, it shows with a 2 or 3% inflation rate, you need to make, you know, 3 or 4 percentage points above that. Then let's build a portfolio that will achieve that rate of return in as linear fashion as possible.
Got it.
And obviously, we'll use multiple asset classes to kind of keep that range of return as narrow as possible. So it's really about focusing on not having any negative surprises.
Yes. Yeah. I think a lot of people miss that aspect of it, you know, especially with now you see a lot of froth. They don't bring it down to the actual objective and the modeling of, you know, your personal cash flow. And I think that's what keeps it very aligned with the long-term plan. All right. It's all about that plan.
For sure. And we'll set aside some money. That's okay. This is your aggressive capital, or this is your risk budget. And if it goes to zero, then it's not going to jeopardize your ability to achieve those goals. And I think that's also part of the learning process as well. Like, hey, let's get excited about some pot stocks, or let's get excited about, you know, Bitcoin. But let's put it at a weight that's suitable for your portfolio. And that also helps them to create some allegiance as well, because typically a client might come to you with a great idea and you can only counsel them so much not to do it, but you size it right and it doesn't work out. And they're like, okay, I get it now. Like, it's not easy. And let's just stay on track, you know? So, but, you know, fortunately for us, we've got really great relationships with our clients and there's a ton of dialogue. We really encourage them to reach out for anything financial or legal. So again, that kind of home office approach gives us the opportunity to educate and protect, which is definitely not a good selling point to athletes who have, you know, they haven't needed education and protection to get where they wanted. They just need to take risks and rely on themselves. So it again goes back to just the uniqueness of the working with an athlete.
That's great. That's great. And talk to me a little bit about the transition from athlete to, you know, post-athlete career. How do you sort of handle that? I remember we talked earlier about the importance of a team, right? They kind of lose that. What's the way to sort of regain that structure?
Well, I think for us, that's an opportunity for us to show a tremendous amount of value because, you know, the length of time we've been working in this, you know, really narrow market, we've taken players from the draft podium to the Hockey Hall of Fame and helped them through that transition. And it's at a time, I mean, every player kind of leaves the game with, you know, one skate still on the ice, so to speak, whether it's because they're injured or because they just don't want to uproot their family for another contract and they want to, you know, kind of begin that exercise of transitioning. But, you know, their heart hasn't left the game. They may still feel like they're capable. And at the same time, you know, you've lost your teammates. Your agent is focused on the active players, not the retired players. You know, maybe you don't get the attention from the media. That could be a good thing. But your notoriety is slowly, you know, eroding. So I think it's important to have, you know, as I mentioned before, that breathing room with your finances, because you know you're going to have some health issues. Hopefully you've got some mental fitness. Hopefully you don't have any behavior that is destructive. And if you have to worry about your finances, it can be very detrimental to your ability to transition. So we're there. I mean, the players are at home more than they've ever been, and that's difficult on a relationship because you don't know where you fit in exactly. Your wife is not you're just not used to having you at home. You're not used to being there. You're trying to figure out what your next destination is. And as these guys are growing up, it's always about, you know, the next shift, the next game, the next practice, the next contract. All of a sudden, what is that destination you're working towards? So the whole mindset change, you've got your routine is completely disrupted. So it is a very, very difficult time for most players. And as you mentioned before, like, it's nice if they can, and this is part of the program where we try to establish, is during the time where you've got some notoriety and you've got the ability to establish connections, let's use those connections during your career to help set you up for your post-career.
Yeah, great, great. And, you know, shifting gears a little bit to the current market environment, from an investment perspective, what are you seeing? How are you sort of bringing that back to the decision-making table? Just in general, equity market performance. Yeah.
Well, our portfolios, as I mentioned, are very much structured like a pension plan. So it's diversified. We'll have about an allocation to growth that may be 50%. You know, traditional income represents maybe 10 to 20% of the portfolio. And then the balance is spread amongst alternatives. So we try to use a large component to try and get some exposure outside the public markets where you're not as susceptible to, you know, the popularity and the day-to-day fluctuations. Yeah. You know, where we are now in the economy, I still think there's a little mini cycle of growth here. The fiscal and monetary situation is still very supportive. Investing rates are still low. Our growth allocation hasn't been adjusted lower, or maybe looking at different industries and different opportunities where the value is, whether it's energy being, you know, basically decimated over the years. And now there's opportunities there. We have made an allocation to cannabis, which has been great for, you know, obviously late 2020 and early 2021, that's worked out well. So I still think there's tons of opportunity, and especially when you've got young investors who've got long-term time horizons, they can afford to have an allocation to growth strategies. Again, going back to that concept of relating the hockey player mindset to investing, we try to remind them that, you know, a hockey game's 60 minutes, your investment horizon is probably at least 60 years. If you're 1 minute into a hockey game, you're not about to change your strategy. And similarly, you're 1 minute into a 60-year investment horizon, let's stick to the process. So, you know, that type of stuff resonates with them. And, you know, we are, again, very diversified, not to a fault, but again, to relate it back to a hockey concept, my business partner, Stu Gavin, would always say, hey, you don't want 20 Stu Gavins on your team. You can use a couple of them, but you need some goal scorers, you need some defensemen. So we try to build a portfolio that can, you know, basically win in any environment.
Yeah, I love that analogy. I think that's great. And it's also, you know, you touched on the point of being young and having that sort of growth tolerance, right, going forward, or the risk tolerance. It's interesting. We look at Canada too. We like Canada versus US because of the energy sort of rebound, commodities. Yeah. We've been seeing Canadian value over growth picking up with the rates. And it's interesting. I work with Lev at the Daily Shot, and we did some numbers on Canadian healthcare. And we were like, whoa, it's like battering everyone else. And it's because of the pot stock allocation or the holding.
Yeah. I mean, yesterday was a difficult day in that sector because it was getting repriced relative to the US opportunity. Domestically and in terms of demand and the retail opportunity, there's definitely some capacity there, but it was way overheated. It came down to correction. That's when we shifted our focus to the US opportunity, having probably missed out on the Canadian opportunity, but got in early on the US opportunity because, you know, again, the pandemic, it's easy to equate what's happening here with the pandemic back to Prohibition and the Great Depression and the need to generate some tax revenue. And then obviously with equality and the justice issues in the US, there's tons of catalysts, never mind the medical applications and the consumer applications. So, we think it's a growing industry, again, that's really, really well valued.
Interesting. Yeah. Especially the tax revenue. I think that's interesting. You definitely need some of that. This is awesome. I think this is great. Where can folks find you just going forward to Gavin Wealth, or where are you located online?
Yeah, so gavingroup.ca.
Okay.
And we've got a monthly newsletter that if you have an interest in the business of sports and obviously the interaction between hockey and finance, definitely feel free to sign up for that newsletter. Yeah, and then of course we're on Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram, so you can find us there as well.
Great. Sounds good, Matt. It's a pleasure having you on board, and looking forward to a great year.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity and continued success.
Thank you.